Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Good evening. Welcome to episode 40 of the AI Comic Pod. We are back. It's been almost 2 months for me. So if I sound a little bit rusty, I almost forgotten the name of the show when I hosted introduced it then. But it's because it's been a while. So the last time I was on, we were discussing previewing Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, and myself and Stu are back to review that film 2 months on. How are you doing, Stu?
Yeah, I'm good. I know we put out a tweet before saying that we were going to be having a guest on with us, but unfortunately Chris wasn't able to make it. So get well soon, mate. We'll have you on as soon as we can.
Yeah, this pod is cursed, I'll be honest. Just not this particular show. We've been trying to do this for the best part of a month, I think, and I've been away for a couple of weeks, and we were going to go see this again. Yeah, it's been a bit of a, you know, I think we were all feeling the end of season Liverpool, you know, fatigue. I think it all felt like we've been pressing the shit out of the last year. So we maybe all needed a little bit of a rest and recharge our batteries. You have been back and done Wonder Woman preview, which you love, the film itself.
Yep.
And I am yet to see, but I'm going to be seeing it soon, and we'll review that quite soon as well. And we've got a couple of other things that if we announce, then we'll definitely get around to doing them. So we are going to do an Ant-Man review or discussion or something along those lines, because we love that film and we really want to talk about it in more detail. And then, yeah, there's a lot of other stuff we need to catch up on. A lot of our shows have ended for the summer. The Flash and Arrow.
Yeah.
Ended a while ago now.
Joey and I said we were going to do a Batman comic look. We were going to do the whole of Batman Rebirth, and I think we said we were going to do a top five or top ten.
I would do it in two parts if I was you, just putting that out there, but
not going to happen.
It's going to be about 4 hours long. And then there's other things. There's been some good stuff this year, because Legion we haven't really discussed at all. And yeah, there's some big things coming back, I guess, it's towards the end of the year, isn't it?
Game of Thrones is back soon. It's not really comic-y, but we end up talking about it anyway.
Yeah, it comes into the thought process. I started watching it from the beginning last week again. I don't know why, but I just wanted to. I'm about through season one, so I've got a couple. It's such a good series.
In relevant news, I finally started watching Smallville from the beginning.
Oh, jeez, guys will be happy.
I think I'm going to live to regret it, because I'm about three quarters of the way through the first season.
How many seasons is it, like 14?
10.
Oh, jeez.
I think it's 280 episodes or something like that. It's ungodly, but I
that
can only
is
do it
mental
because all of my shows are finished. I've got literally about four shows. In fact, I might have three because American Gods is finished now. So I've barely got anything to watch.
I need to watch American Gods. I'll tell you what's worth revisiting, I'd say Daredevil I started to watch again, and that's really good from the start. I think we've only watched it once.
I've been watching season two in work when I'm doing testing, because I have to use Netflix a lot, and it's just me go-to whenever I need either a HD or a 4K stream. My account has always got, you know, continue watching Daredevil. So I've always got it running in the background. I watched the episode the other day where Punisher's captured him and he's got him chained on the roof.
Nice.
That famous translation. That's a when it's the first time that he properly speaks, isn't it? When you get some real actual dialogue and he starts getting into his head. But yes. So we've got lots and lots of stuff coming up. We just need to stay healthy, stay in the country, and not die in this heat. If we can if we can do all those three things, we should be back on track.
I think we'll get back on track in no time at all. So, yeah, we are back, and a few people are quite happy, and hopefully this is greeted with a little bit of, I don't know, a little response, as we always hope to get. And I've been doing a little bit of writing, but I do find it a little bit harder to do. So respect to Joey and any of the football writers and stuff, that because it's so hard to find the time, you know. That's as much as anything else, it's hard to find the time. And these shows take a little bit more prep than just going to the cinema, albeit a lot of the time we just like to chat, so that's fun. So the reason we're here is to talk about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. We did predict it would be a great film, and I think by and large, and obviously we're going on a little bit from when it was released, it's been pretty unanimously successful and pretty much adored by most people, I'd say.
Yeah, I've just had a quick look.
850 million, was it worldwide?
844.4. So for argument's sake, 850 million. And it was released basically 2 months ago. That's mental.
See, 2 months ago, yeah. And I think in the States, it's only been...
It was out in May, so it's been about...
It's 5 or 6 weeks,
Five, 6 weeks. That's insane.
Yeah, I think it'll probably... It might not creep over the billion mark, but
I don't know, you know.
You've got to, it might well do. I mean, you've got to look at it. I don't know if it's got any more staggered releases or whether it must be out everywhere.
I think it's out everywhere. I think the last place it came out is usually China, isn't it?
Because yeah, it is.
James Gunn is brilliant at social media usage. Arguably, I think he does it better than anyone else in his position. He knows just what to release, when to do it, to build the hype and then to keep it going. And the last one I remember them doing was a China premiere. So it's out. It's certainly it's out in the big markets. It's out in Europe. It's out in North America, and now it's in the Asian market.
Yeah, I mean, following on for Marvel, I mean, it's what they probably hoped it would be. You know, second films will always generally do well if the first film did well, and I think they've marketed it really well. I think they've maybe brought on. Well, I think the existing audience from before, but maybe different generation. I think Baby Groot, particularly for my son, got him interested into Guardians because they can market well. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's very clever what Disney do as a rule, because I know it's Marvel, but Disney linked, and they know how to market to all generations, I'd say, because, you know, it was the same with BB-8 when they did The Force Awakens, and it just gets that kind of buzz.
You couldn't move, could you? There was BB-8, everything from socks right up to, you know, scale model remote controlled ones, and now it's the same with Baby Groot.
Baby Groot is a lot of places. Yeah, exactly. I would admit, though, having just been to Universal and Disneyland, I mean, Universal product their things much better at the parks than Disney do. Disney kind of focuses on stuff that I didn't expect. Well, Mickey Mouse and all that shit, but and princesses and fairies and all that kind of stuff. But it doesn't do so well on things like Big Hero 6 and the kind of boys stuff. And it's kind of surprised me a little bit, because I don't know, it felt like Universal was the boys' park and Disney was the girls a little bit, which is kind of, you know, fine. But because there's that kind of weird rides going on, you've got Spider-Man rides and you've got all the X-Men stuff, and you've got everything at Universal Studios, which is a bit strange. You think Guardians is the kind of big plug for them, and you think they might start to work towards that kind of Marvel Kingdom, because, I mean, you know, it's going strength to strength still, and Spider-Man is getting a huge early buzz. I know it's off topic, but like huge opening weekend predicted. Although, that said, Wonder Woman 100 million didn't it opening weekend, which has surprised me greatly, because I think when we last spoke about it before I was on the preview, there was literally no marketing at all. It was almost like unheard of, and then presume they've just got the buzz and all the reviews came out and have taken it on a bit of a wave, which is great. So it feels like it's going to be another big year for comic book release films, which is no real surprise, let's be honest.
Well, Wonder Woman has already grossed over $500 million.
See, that's some going. It's only been out a couple of weeks.
Yeah, and Guardians 2 has overtaken Guardians 1. In terms of global, I mean, obviously, global box office isn't the be all and end all. It's not the sole metric, but it's a good barometer of how well it's been received. And the fact that the difficult sophomore film, you know, the second album syndrome, as they often call it, the fact that it's gone out and many people have said it's better. I think it's better than the first film. If you take it as what it is, if you look at the narrative around the characters, the way the characters are better developed, I think it looks 10 times better.
Look, completely agree. The look of it, and we will talk about that opening scene, which I think is one of the best opening scenes of all time, just after Russell. Although his transformation, Kurt Russell, into a younger man is quite incredible.
It's terrifying. That stuff, technology that they're using now, you think...
Robert Downey Jr.
had Robert Downey Jr., which made me genuinely rub my eyes to go, hang on, it's actually in. Because at first I thought they'd got a lookalike, and I had to check. And then there was Princess Leia, was maybe not as good, but the Kurt Russell one was incredible. It was as if they'd really got in a DeLorean, gone back to what, the 70s, and plucked
him. It's 70s, crazy. Early 80s.
He must have been freaked out when he saw himself.
Yeah.
Like, that must have loved it. Weird.
It's quite incredible, actually. And I do look at it and go, yeah, that's the kind of, do you know what, that's the kind of technology you want in films, almost. Because as much as the big CG and the big green screen and all that kind of stuff, I kind of like the subtle stuff. And something like that, which just feels so real. I mean, I think Downey Jr. was a little bit glowing somewhat. He didn't quite fit.
He looked a bit pregnant, didn't he? He did have a bit of a glow about him. And it was the same with Princess Leia. She looked...
Yeah.
She didn't have real skin tone. Like, she had no pores. You could see that she was CG. Kurt Russell looked as if he could have walked off a soundstage somewhere and stood next to current Kurt Russell as if some kind of a clone. It's just so scarily good, but so accurate.
I just thought it was a really... The thing with this film, and it's difficult for me to judge because I love that first film so much. I think the first film, structure-wise, might have been a little bit better. I felt like the plot was quite succinct. It kind of made sense. I think this one, they realised about halfway through they had to get on and tell a story, whereas we all just wanted them to fight more things in space and take the piss out of each other and just basically fuck around for 2 hours. So I'd been really happy with them just ripping the piss out of each other. But I think it had to get itself together. But then, you know, I think Ronan was arguably the weaker part of the first film in terms of villain.
Yeah.
I think Russell, as a rule, he doesn't really fear you. You don't get much dread from him. Do you know what I mean? But he doesn't fear you with much, I don't know,
I don't think he's meant to be that kind of a villain. I like the fact that he's a villain
his
without
goal
being
is different.
Homicidal, yeah. You know. Well, he has. I mean, he was prepared to wipe out life in the entire galaxy, but he doesn't believe that he's doing anything wrong because he thinks that it's for the greater good, because it's for his survival and because he's a celestial. He is above everyone else in the whole galaxy.
The bit that triggered me just with him when you mentioned that is when they do the whole, when they first show about him, what he did on different planets.
Oh, God, yeah.
And then they show the reproducing with all the different beings. It's like, that was a bit of a shock to the system because that was quite dark. And this film, you know, let's be honest, is generally a pretty light-hearted film.
Oh, yeah. That scene where he's walking around the hall, it was brilliantly done the way he had the statues reenacting it. And like I say, it starts off, it's beautiful. It's telling this story about how he wants to be and how he wants to travel and see the world. And then when it gets to the bit where you realise that Quill's mum was not special. She was what, you know, she was number 5,000 in a list of millions.
Yeah.
And then when he drops the bomb that he's
when he drops that bomb, this is a spoiler special, by the way, just in case anyone is thinking otherwise. This is very much spoil it. If you've not seen it already, I would be surprised. But
when he drops that bombshell that he gave her cancer, that was I think I actually did go, what?
Yeah, no, there was an element of that for me because I genuinely didn't see that coming in that regard.
He painted it, didn't he? The whole thing was she was the exception. She was a genuine love. She was, you know, she was the love of his life. But then he was able to put a tumor in her head and just kill her off like that. And it very, very dark. But the way he delivers it as well, he's so upbeat the way he's talking about it, as if, you know, I just, you know, went to the kitchen, made myself a cup of tea, got some biscuits, killed someone, and then I just went and watched TV. You know, he just drops it in the middle of a dialogue without breaking pace at all. And that's what I liked about him.
That what was good about him is you're right. His pacing, his way of delivering things is kind
so lighthearted, isn't it? Like the film, he's so jovial and he looks really non-threatening. He's nice and colourful. He's big. He's smiling. He's got his big, huge, bushy beard like Santa. But he's actually really, I don't know, he's genocidal, xenophobic, whatever. But he was quite happy to wipe out billions of lives across all these planets so long as his reach, you know, increased throughout the galaxy.
Yeah.
That's really fucking evil. But I agree with what you said before that Ronan probably was the weakest point in the first film, but that's it's not like, you know, he was shit. He just wasn't anywhere near up to the
and the one of my favorite parts of the film is when
the dance off
the dance off, because his reaction is just incredible.
What are you doing?
just because he looks so evil and threatening, and throughout it he's got this very threatening exterior, you know, doesn't ever smile, doesn't ever show any form of emotion really other than rage, and he just suddenly does it's that nonchalant kind of what the fuck is going on look, which I think, to be honest, being on set with James Gunn would eventually do that to you, because it just sounds like they have such an incredible time, and I don't think they take themselves that seriously, let's be honest. But yeah, I think the casting, Kurt Russell was great, and I just think he kind of sets the tone quite well early on, and then what you obviously lead into, which for me, strangely, I mean, there's some great scenes in this film, and overall, I think it's got some really memorable moments. But James Gunn doing the CG dancing as Baby Groot.
Have you seen the behind the?
Yes.
The videos that they use for the actual mocap are hilarious. Because if you'd said to me who'd done that, I never would have picked him. I would have said probably Chris Pratt.
Yeah, or,
Bradley Cooper, something like that. I would never have imagined that James Gunn would have done that. I read something before, and I might have to fact check this.
He did the Baby Groot dance in the first film.
I'm sure that somewhere said it took something like 2 years to plan and to actually do that scene, because the amount of movement that was involved, and because you think everything that's going on in the background for what, a good few minutes, every step of the way, Groot is moving and dancing and spinning and interacting with things. That apparently that whole scene took 2 years, but I need to fact check that.
Yeah, I think, being honest, it's one of the best CG-driven scenes I can remember, full stop, in any film.
It's everything, the expressions on his face when he's really getting into it as Mr. Blue Sky is playing. It's just... And you don't know what to do, because they're fighting this gigantic alien space worm in the background, but you're watching the little baby tree dancing and scooting and shuffling across the stage, and you don't know what to look at. You're like, I should be watching the fight, but he's so cute. Look at him. It's brilliant. That's going to be one of the most replayed scenes. When it's out on Blu-ray and stuff, you'll find a lot of people, I bet a lot of kids, will be having their parents pausing and rewinding that, and they'll be dancing along to it. It's just,
I will be watching that scene, let's be honest.
And dancing
along
to it. I
will watch that scene 100 times, I would imagine, by the end of the year. Yeah, because like I said, you don't know what to do. You're watching the scene going, that's incredible. But then in the background, you're going, look at that, and then look at this. And then there's kind of fireworks and explosions. And Groot then starts interacting with the people, doesn't he? He obviously waves at Gamora. Yeah. It's just genius.
They showed that in one of the trailers, didn't they? And he doesn't seem to get the gravity of the situation, and it's a big over-the-top wave, and you've got the Quill's little pouty moment when he sees Gamora using... she's using a gun, isn't she?
Yes.
And he's like, yeah. Oh, but guns were my thing. I thought you were using swords, and he's really pissed off about it.
He's just... That's... Yeah, I mean, that's what he plays that well, doesn't he? Do you know what I mean? That's his proper kind of... It's like a high school romance, isn't it, with those two? And he just doesn't know. It's like, but they were my thing, and I thought that was your thing. It's just genius. It's so clever.
Drax and his chafing nipples. So he won't wear a rocket pack.
That's that line. I mean, you know, we can talk about Drax in detail because he pretty much steals the film, I think, on the most part. I think him and Rocket are the two that have really got the most.
It was Rocket for me. I felt probably my only criticism of the whole film was sometimes it felt like they'd gone from one extreme to the other of Drax being super dry, and now they were almost pushing him too much as the comedy leg to lean on.
Yeah, but you can't... When he laughs, it almost... It spontaneously it's makes infectious. You laugh. It's the very clever scene when, obviously, Mantis reveals his Quill's inner secret about being in love with Gamora, which isn't so surprising, let's be honest. Or he lusts after and all the other stuff she says. And Drax is obviously just in stitches laughing. Mantis touches him and they're both just absolutely creasing. That just... I remember the cinema just being in absolute bits at that moment in time. And that's something I was going to say about the film. So I watched it in IMAX 3D, and it was just breathtaking, that particular opening scene in particular. You know, it was just really stunning. And the sound quality and everything was just pitch perfect with this film. The production is just off the charts, and I think you can see how meticulous James Gunn is. Reaction to the film is something that did it for me. So in the cinema, I went first night. I think you did the Friday night anyway.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was obviously full, and the audience were just loving it. And everyone there was presumably a big fan, as they would be. And then I went to see it with my little boy in the States about, I don't know, 2 weeks ago now. So it'd already been out a month, and it was kind of half empty. You know, it was middle of the day kind of thing. And people were laughing and people were kind of getting it. But it's such a different experience. I don't know, because obviously I was answering a shit ton of questions to a six-year-old and trying to explain what the hell was going on. And he generally, well, he really enjoyed it, but there's a lot of things that would go over his head.
You'd making hope a Drax lot of them would reference. Go over his head.
Well, I know exactly. Might have closed his eyes on the scene where they're talking about impregnating the world, because it wasn't exactly six-year-old friendly. But other than that, you know, it's all good. And It's a weird thing with the film, because I think the first time I went in, I came out thinking, that's one of the best films I've ever seen. And then the second time, it's kind of on reflection and a little bit different. And because I wasn't probably fully giving it my attention, and I think I want to watch it again, you know, and just kind of soak it all back in again, because it's just, there's a lot of subtlety as much as it's all in your face, you know, but there are some very clever lines. Usually
you pick up a lot
Star-Lord.
More second time, yeah. Don't you? I remember thinking it about Deadpool. The first time I watched
I
picked up a lot. But the second time, because I wasn't looking for the things that were in your face, I was able to pick out some of the really subtle things that are like in the background. And I came out the second time and really appreciated Deadpool more. And then even more so the third time, because I felt like I'd picked up every last granular detail. And that's why I like going and seeing films more than once, because you get carried away in the gravity and the magnitude, don't you, in the first time, but then the second time you can be a little bit more calm. You can listen to the dialogue. You know when something really big's coming up, so you know, right, I need to really pay attention to this bit.
Yeah, and I think for me, I mean, I enjoyed it more the first time, just given the experience, because I think everyone was enjoying it. Do you know what I mean? When you're in a cinema and it's the right audience and everyone gets it, do you know what I mean? And yeah. You know everyone in that first showing is going to wait till the end credits. Do you know what I mean? All the way to the end of the credits.
I think there was
a ton of five?
In ours, I think there might have been... It was very, very full. It was maybe... Yeah. Three quarters full, because it was only 2 days after release. I only remember seeing half a dozen, maybe 10 people leave. Everyone else knows the drill.
You're almost booing those people as they leave. Do you know what I mean?
You see people, because most people that are there are in groups, either small groups. Me and Tom were there, and you see people going in fours, fives, and sixes. And when you see someone leave, and people are nudging each other, going, they don't realise that there's post-credit scenes coming up. Those fucking idiots. You'll have to watch them on YouTube, loser. Because you just don't... You know after every film, comic book film, unless you've specifically read it before going in, you sit down and you wait for the credits. And we knew going into this, when I'd heard everything from 2 to 5, and just before, when the lights were getting ready to come down, I read one last thing, and it was from... I don't know whether it was from James Gunn or somebody else on the cast, and it said, yes, there are 5 post-credit scenes. So we looked at it and went, right, let's make sure we keep our arses glued to these seats. And as we were going down, we were counting them off, going, right, that's 1, that's 2. And, yeah, the whole thing, when you go and see these films, you don't just get an hour and a half, 2 hours. It's everything. The anticipation before it.
I completely agree, actually. Yeah, I completely agree. That's the big thing for me. It's James Gunn film is from start to finish.
From 0001 on your timer, right through to 15 minutes after the credits started, you still sat there, you still gripped, you've not got your phone out, you've not sort of half put your jacket on because you're getting ready to leave, you're still completely in the zone because you can't, if you blink, you miss the Easter eggs in the post-credits.
Who's the guy... Oh, God, why is Jeff Goldblum in dancing in the post-credits? It's just genius, which you may have missed.
I'm thinking I missed that.
Yeah, Jeff Goldblum is dancing in the post-credit scenes, which is just incredible.
When they had the viral footage that came out with like the group scoot and the Ravager Raver and stuff. I did see Jeff. I thought you meant in one of the actual scenes, but it was on the credits roll, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's on the credits roll.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, stuff like that, even on the credits roll, there's something to keep your eye, do you know what I mean? And obviously the soundtrack is something else. Like, you talk about the film, and then you're waiting for the release, but the soundtrack with these films is something that just... You play before, middle, during, after, all the way and until the release, and then you still play... I still play the first soundtrack now. And the second soundtrack's just incredible.
It's all part of the experience, isn't it? Again, it's something that he gets better than... so many other people. It's an experience, you know, and he talks about it all the time. They love the fact that people go and watch the film, but then on the way home from the film, they're downloading or streaming the soundtrack, and then they've got it on for 3 weeks every single day in work.
Our good friend Marco Lopez tweeted nearly every day about 2 weeks after, you know, listening to the chain, listening to this, listening to that. Like, you definitely got it. And I was the same, you know. It's one of those soundtracks which, again, he just kind of gets the right kind of hooks and the right moments for the right scenes. And, I mean, there's a few powerful scenes in this. Father and Son by Cat Stevens is the song.
Oh, yeah. I remember we said about that in the preview.
We
expected that to be over some kind of a heartfelt moment between
Kurt Russell
between the two of them.
Yeah, we were wrong father figure in the end.
But we got the message right. We just got the daddy wrong.
Yeah, we probably didn't predict what it would be playing on.
I don't think anyone could have predicted that twist.
If they'd gone for an early iPod, apparently. Peter Quill's early dialogue was something really long and profound and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, he just said, you know, you killed my mom and broke my Walkman or whatever he said. And he just said, James Gunn said, no, nothing else. I don't need any more words. That's just perfect. And I don't think it was ad-libbed, but it was the one they went with. And I just thought it was great.
A big over-the-top dialogue wouldn't have suited, would it? It wouldn't have gone with the character because... he's a very emotive character. He speaks from the heart, and sometimes he says stupid things in the moment. And in the grand scheme of things, that was probably really stupid, but it's just pure emotion based on what he was feeling.
Yeah. And you know, in other films, you would have thought, you know, the introduction of the kind of bigger actors or random actors in certain roles, like Sly Stallone, for instance, wouldn't have really worked. Do you know what I mean? But I don't think it felt subtle enough. It didn't feel like they were trying to take over the scenes. It felt like they were kind of integrated into the film. Do you know what I mean? And I thought that story with Yondu was almost a secondary story, but it was probably, when it came to it, was probably the most prominent. And listening to James Gunn particularly, he loves Michael Rooker.
Oh,
he absolutely adores him.
I mean, they're practically BFFs, but yeah. He says he cannot praise him enough for the work that he does and the way he does it and what a consummate professional he is and the way he is on the press tours. He's got time for everyone. And I heard a really strange quote before from Chris Pratt. He said that he thought that Michael Rooker had the best shirtless scene in the film because Michael Rooker's was exposing a different side of Yondu, whereas his own one was just him showing off his physique again, and he thought that it was kind of a bit fluffy.
His felt very gratuitous, actually, and it was a bit of a strange scene, you know, but Yondu's felt, you know, genuine. Do you know what I mean? You just felt the kind of emptiness. Do you know what I mean? In that scene particularly, when he's shacked up with some robotic prostitutes or whatever, it just felt completely soul destroying for him. And it was, wasn't it?
Because we thought Yondu from the first film was this really, really badass Ravager space pirate, and it turns out that he's not even liked by the Ravagers. He's not technically even a Ravager anymore. Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah.
He poo-poos the fact that he's still wearing the Ravager logo, and he feels sort of slighted by the fact that he's wearing it, because they basically kicked him out, haven't they, for what he was doing. And then it all comes out. We now know what he was doing, how he picked up Peter Quill. Because they hinted at it, didn't they, as to why he picked him up and he was delivering him to his dad. But then the scale comes up.
That was the thing. That sudden moment when you went, okay, you know, I get it. He's been taking children from all over the galaxy and trying to use their powers if they had any, which they didn't. But when you suddenly realise that Yondu's the one that was delivering all of them, do you know what I mean, and earning a lot of money and doing very, very bad things, but Quill's the one that made him change. Do you know what I mean? And
it was his little moment of retribution.
Yeah.
And a lot of people said it's tough to look past anyone other than Yondu in terms of development. Because Rocket came on leaps and bounds. The humanised Rocket a lot more.
They did.
They rounded out Drax, but nobody that I can think had any kind of an impact in the way that Yondu did. Yondu went from villain to like the lowest of the low villain to the ultimate hero in the space of 2 hours.
Yeah. No one else made that kind of impact. I'd make a case for development of a character almost secondary. Rocket, as you mentioned, but Nebula's got a good kind of interesting arc in this as well.
Yeah.
I thought Karen Gillan was really good, albeit in a quite a reduced role, but I thought her and Gamora were interesting, and when they eventually got to the crux of it, I thought that was good.
It was nice to see that, because, again, from the first one, she's just a big, badass robot killing machine, and then it turns out that all she wanted in life.
Well, they've all got daddy issues. Let's put it that way.
All she wanted was a sister, somebody to play with and have fun with. And every time she excelled, every time Gamora excelled, Nebula's the one that pays the price.
Yeah,
and then it starts getting really dark, because we know what Thanos is. We know that he's.
Well, you do, but I would say from a perspective of the MCU, they've never really expressed it in film format, you've got to remember that 90% of probably people going, having done any comic reading, I wouldn't imagine. Maybe 70%, maybe 80%, but they might have read on Wikipedia, they might have read on the internet, IMDb, whatever. But I don't think they would have read to the depths that I don't think anyone really knows to the extent how bad Thanos is. I think, you know, Loki's the one that's the most charismatic villain, but I don't think in the MCU we've really had any villain that's, I don't know, nothing at the level of the Joker. Do you know what I mean? No, oh, one is sadistic no. or no, mind.
No, no genuine, like, cold-blooded psychopath.
No, exactly. And I think, you know, it's hinting at the well, it's obviously more than hinting at that with Thanos, but it's there wasn't, I was surprised he wasn't in the film. Do you know what I mean? It did surprise me a little bit. And it did surprise me that, again, Thor is going to be the film that has to lead into, you know, into Infinity Wars, really, because that's got to do all the groundwork. I think we're still missing an Infinity Stone, aren't we? And there's obviously one in Doctor Strange, but...
Technically, I think we're missing two.
Okay.
That haven't actually been formally named as stones.
Yeah, so that's quite interesting. I think Thor's going to have its work cut out. It doesn't have to do it on a big scale, but I was surprised and actually pleasantly surprised in a lot of ways that Guardians 2 was all the directors. Do you know what I mean? You could tell it was James Gunn was the full license to do what he wanted to. And I think maybe just that they learned from the first film to let him do that. They gave him this full trust. And like we said before on the preview, that he's the third director. He's the only first director to be penciled in to do all three films in a trilogy, which is great. Yeah. Obviously, the Russo brothers are getting their own. Yeah, they're well liked. Do you know what I mean? And I think you would have thought Joss Whedon would have been involved if things didn't go the way they'd gone a little bit in the second film. And
yeah, if that relationship hadn't got so sour, then it's hard to. I don't think he would have walked away if it had still been friendly and amicable.
And you look how they're kind of clambering after him, DC. Do you know what I mean? He's now tying up Justice League, isn't he?
Because of Zack Snyder having to bow out.
Yeah, which I think bears it good promise, to be honest, no disrespect. Yeah. But I think if he's given any kind of license to change any of the film, I don't know how deep it was to production, but that might only be a good thing, to be honest, because I think Whedon did some incredible work, really, looking back at it, and for the Avengers and Age of Ultron, which we talked about. So, you know, Gunn's obviously held in huge esteem by Marvel, and you can see why. I mean, it's properly his vision, the film, you know, and from start to finish, like we said, there's nothing. It just feels like he gets everything across. I mean, if the characters that I think are a little bit underwhelming, I think we should talk about, we'll go back and talk about Rocket in more detail and a bit more about Yondu and stuff. But I think Gamora and even Star-Lord, I don't think got as much to work with as you might have hoped.
No, yeah, I think that's fair comment. I think it did sort of take the focus away, but I think it had to. Because we already had the Peter Quill origin story. If they'd just done a second one, it would have been a little bit boring. And they couldn't have flipped it and done... There's not really that much of Gamora to do an origin story with.
No.
But they did have the bit. You know, they got the explanation of why the relationship with Nebula is the way it is. You know, why she is the way she is. Because she's the way she is because she had to survive. If she didn't beat Nebula, it was her that was going to be tortured and have limbs removed, so, you know, survival of the fittest and all that.
Exactly.
And
no, I agree.
It fleshed out where it needed to be done, but he still got all the things that he got from the first film, didn't he? He still got the good lines, he still got the action, he still got the awkward sort of love story angle where you just don't know if him and Gamora are ever actually going to work it out. You've got him versus Rocket because they both respect but kind of hate each other. Where he's just thinking of as many different nicknames as he can. Like, Trash Panda is a great one.
Trash Panda just... And he's like, is Trash Panda better? It's yeah, so much worse. that was... Yeah, they... Oh, that scene when they're being chased by the... what are they called? The Golden People of whichever...
I can't remember what they're called.
I can't remember what they're bloody called. They're quite forgettable as well, I'll be honest. I mean, she's quite interesting as a lead.
Yeah,
Aisha, and I can't remember what the... the country or the area, whatever it is. But I kind of like that it's like a video game, that they're chasing them on those virtual ships. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? I think that was really subtle and really quite clever. But she's quite good when she gets some screen time, and I kind of liked it when she rocked
Elizabeth
up with
DeBicki.
Yeah, when she rocked up at Yondu's place and had the full red carpet rolled out. Do you know what I mean? She's certainly interesting, but her best scene as a side character was definitely when they, you know, defeated the giant squid thing, and then went and Rocket was doing his whole winking thing, and Peter Quill was basically chatter up. You know what I mean? Star-Lord was putting the moves on until Gamora kind of gave him the eye, and he decided to back down a little bit, which I just thought that first kind of half an hour, 45 minutes, I can't remember having that much fun at the cinema for quite a long time, actually. I just thought, and when they were flying the ship and Rocket kept taking over and he kept taking over, and then Groot was being passed around the ship, and I just thought it was brilliant. And that subtle stuff about, you know, with the fruit not being ripe, and they, you know, that was quite a funny scene when they just kept telling Nebula, the fruit's not right, you can't eat it. And everyone kept telling her, and then she went to eat it, said, shit, it's not right. It's just, I like all the subtlety. It's not all about...
She's very good, Karen Gill.
Yeah, she is. Yeah, I really do think she's great, actually. Her scene when... Oh, it's a great scene with Rocket, you know, when they're on that island and Quill's gone off to... Ego's planet with Gamora and Drax, and they're fixing the ship, and he basically messes with the group of Ravagers and puts all his booby traps in place, and I thought that was really good. And then she just comes straight in, Nebula, once she's been freed by Groot, and just shoots off Yondu's fin and just says hello boys. I thought that was just
very
she's
evil.
Got great presence. Yeah, I just think she's got great presence, and I thought I liked it when she was on the ship, and her scenes between her and James Gunn's brother,
Sean.
Yeah, I thought he was. I thought he was great, actually, as well.
Oh, what's his bloody name?
What is his name?
Oh, Craglin.
Yeah, I thought he was really good.
His role was relatively, compared to the first one, was huge.
Yeah, he had a very prominent part to play, because he was kind of, in the first one, he was one of.
He was just one of the Ravagers, wasn't he?
A dozen of people who kind of sniggered here and there and said the odd thing, do you know what I mean? But didn't have any import into the story necessarily. And I thought he was, the scene, almost he got me in that scene with Yondu at his funeral. You know, when he just kind of hits his heart really hard and stuff. That he was very good, actually. And that's the thing with this film. I don't think any of the side characters really let anything down, do you know what I mean? I thought it was more the leads, which didn't always get enough to work with, really.
Yeah, that's a good shout. You could definitely argue that this was more the sidekicks film than the main ones.
And you just think, going into it, you just wonder whether Yondu was that much of a lead character. Do you know what I mean? I guess the script is set, isn't it? But it seems like maybe through development that he just got more of a prominent role than maybe you expected. I mean, I don't know. You would have thought Chris Pratt was the one that... Chris Pratt and Kurt Russell's story was the one everyone expected to be the main aspect of the film. And obviously it is in a lot of ways, and it's the main kind of plot. But it's all the subplots that go on around it that I actually found more interesting. And
yeah.
I think Rocket and Groot, again... I mean, I don't know if it was Chris that mentioned the spin-off, but... what I'd pay to see a Rocket and Groot spin-off. I just absolutely love those two characters. And I thought, I mean, Baby Groot we have to talk about. And then we'll go on to talk about Rocket, because Baby Groot wasn't too much. Do you know what I mean? Did you have any fears like I did that it was just a gimmick at times?
No. I like a child, I completely bought into the whole thing. I thought there was going to be more... like setups, like there'd be more things that say they could put on t-shirts, you know, more famous scenes with him, something like that.
I still the scene where he's gonna push the wrong button
the scene was it's Bradley Cooper that makes that, because it's the exasperation in his voice where he's just going, no, And he can't, and you wish you could understand what Groot is saying. He goes, I am Groot, yes. I am Groot, yes. I am Groot, no! It's just, Bradley Cooper's brilliant. I can't wait for the behind the scenes videos to come out of him doing his voice work, because he's brilliant. And the effort he puts into it, there was a good piece with him, I think it was on Ellen a couple of years ago, and he's talking about his method of how he does it, and he puts more work into the voice work than he does with a real scene, because he accepts that you can't see what he's doing, so he's got to convey more with less.
Yeah, and I think you always know he does. I mean, he's outside of Drax, he's got the best lines in the film. He delivers everything perfectly, but all his script, all his lines are just brilliant. Obviously, the scene when he's fighting with Quill on the ship is genius, but the scenes when he's locked up with Yondu, and obviously they find a kind of relationship, and that's something quite touching in a way.
It starts off borderline abusive, doesn't it? Like, he's constantly reminding him, I had to stop the rest of the crew from eating you. And then you really do, towards the end, you really do get the sense of, well, he clearly does actually have a lot of affection for him. And he's saying it because he actually means it, that he really did save people from eating him, but he did it for a reason.
Yeah. And I think Yondu's kind of relationship with all the kind of characters is interesting. You know, him and Rocket have got, someone said that's another father-son type relationship. It's not. All it is two people that share a similar kind of history. Do you know what I mean? Two people that were abused in one way or another. Or
it's more like a brother thing, isn't it? It's not father-son, it's more brother, or maybe, I don't know, just, they're like kind of kindred spirits, aren't they?
Because Rocket's not really met
anyone who knows what it's like to have been screwed over that much. Your entire life.
Exactly, and Yondu keeps reminding him that I know what you're going through. Do you know what I mean? He's saying, he explains to Rocket, you're this and you're that and you're this, and he's like, well, you know, because I'm you. Do you know what I mean? I get it, and I thought their relationship was interesting. And Groot had, I mean, one of my favourite scenes, if not my favourite scene, is when he's bringing back different things. I just thought it was just absolute gold.
And it harks back to the prison scene, doesn't it?
It was set up to be perfect, yeah. And this film does hark back to the first film really well at times. And
without being cheesy.
Yeah, and I don't know if it refers back to Kevin Bacon, but obviously it's all about David Hasselhoff in this one. But it does refer back well, you know, with Star-Lord and Gamora and them dancing and those kind of scenes. And that works really quite subtly. But I love that he brought the eye. It's just like bringing the leg in the first film in the prison. And I just thought it was just absolutely genius. And obviously the severed toe. And Rocket says to Yondu, do you have a place where you keep, like, human toes? I said, no. He's just shaking his head. He's like, let's never speak about this again. And then he brings a desk.
brings dragging one of those it rats. Down the hallway.
It's just like, it's great that they're trying to explain this to Groot. I think Groot's intelligence levels do go up and down a little bit sometimes in this film.
I prefer him when he's being an absolute idiot, because that's when he's at his most cute.
Yeah,
when but he's an absolute dickhead.
But you feel for him as well. They send him to the tailor, don't they? he puts him in his little thing, but they fucking pour beer all over him and stuff. And
his little Ravager outfit.
Yeah,
because they made a big deal out of that in the first trailer. That, well, it's, you know, Rocket's in a Ravager outfit, and maybe he's being kidnapped or captured, and it turns out he's just become the little mascot, hasn't he? He's just a little poster child for the Ravagers.
Yeah, I thought the Ravagers were quite interesting. You liked the taser face joke.
Oh, I loved it, because it was so stupid.
I know, it's proper James Gunn. I bet they were having a right laugh at when they were doing that scene.
You can imagine when they were doing like a table read for it. They must have been pissing themselves.
It's Bradley Cooper's kind of sarcastic fake laughing.
And then he says...
What were they going to call you, scrotum head or something? That just absolutely got me. And obviously my little boy, he wouldn't have even picked up on that, but I was in absolute bits. No, I know, but I was just in absolute bits, because that part of the film, I just thought it was really, really good. That would have been an awkward one. But what the Ravagers were doing was actually pretty brutal in those scenes. And then what Yondu and Rocket proceeded to do, basically mass slaughtered a lot of them.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard in reviews people a bit taken back by that, actually. And I kind of, because of the way it's done, you know, with the song and the style, and it didn't even make me blink.
Me either.
But well, I think
that
to
just
other
goes
people,
to show the power of the way it's shot. And as you said, the music sets the tone. If you've got people being murdered, but there's a happy classic rock song on, you're not going to take it as much as if there was, like, you know, Halloween music playing or something like that that's really chilling
and
gets
music,
the hair standing
the
up.
Music is perfect. I mean, Brandy sets the tone really well and obviously played more than once in the film.
Yeah.
And the chain's used a couple of times. And I saw George Harrison's song when they first go to Ego's planet, when they just see how splendid the planet is and all this stuff and all the bubbles popping and stuff. I thought that was just really good.
I think my favourite out of the my favourite song off the soundtrack is The Chain, because The Chain is my jam.
The Chain is just
but
such a great song.
My favourite one from the film was actually Brandy. I think the way they used it and the way it became, it was the narrative, wasn't it, for his entire
relationship?
It was
a narrative. It's
amazing.
Almost the narrative of their life, you know. Yeah, so
they
obviously
must have chosen it, because the way it's... He recites the lyrics, doesn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's it. It's as if the song was written about Ego and Meredith's relationship, and very, very clever. Very clever.
It was clever. And I think the thing is, obviously Kurt Russell then goes on to say that he'd been back 3 times and he did genuinely feel X, Y, and Z, but then he still killed her off with a brain tumour. So he's not exactly got any redeeming overall qualities. But,
even the scene
when they're playing with energy, you know, and Star-Lord learns how to use the kind of energy and the powers he's got, and they just play catch, like a lot of kind of traditional American, you know, baseball kind of thing. See that in other films would be a bit of a, oh, Jesus, kind of moment. But it works. And that's the thing. Everything about the film, in fairness, was subtle enough, except Drax. And I think Drax's humour in this film and Drax's approach, some of his lines... He's so OTT, but some of his lines were genius, I'll be honest. The lines, well, his relationship with Mantis, who's almost like a daughter to him, and it is obviously all about family in its approach, do you know what I mean? It's all daddy issues and sister issues and family kind of stuff. But Mantis is obviously an interesting character, but he keeps constantly saying how repulsive she's looking.
Yeah.
And she's like, but, you know, I'm not interested in you. And then he starts almost throwing up in his mouth. The thought of having to sleep with her is repulsive. And then at the end of the film, he basically says, you know, you're beautiful on the inside.
Yeah.
And I just thought actually, he was very funny. And the line, which is probably the most over the top, about his turds being notoriously large, I think that's what he said, was just,
I think it was large.
The cinema was just in raptures, do you know what I mean? You can't, as much as it's childish humour and all the rest of it, it still had everyone laughing.
If you can't find a little bit of humour in an alien, a big muscle-bound alien laughing about how giant his turds are, then you shouldn't be watching a comic book film. You should probably be going and watching, like, you know, a French art house film about a really depressed cat or something. you shouldn't be watching a film about basically space pirates.
Do you know what? I think we'll know if we've made it in about 18 months to 2 years' time if the film gets released.
It's going to be called something like Le Meow or something.
Yeah, exactly.
I actually kind of want to see that film now.
As long as it's got
Bradley Cooper doing the voice. Bradley Cooper starring in Le Meow.
I'm not sure what film it is, but oh god, it's not 500 Days of Summer. There's a film, it might be Trainwreck actually, where Daniel Radcliffe is randomly a dog walker, and for some reason I can see Daniel Radcliffe in this cat-based French film, black and white art house thing. You know, it's going to go down a storm.
Yeah.
I think you've got a golden ticket right there.
I just need someone to finance it, because I'm broke as shit.
Yeah, well, tell me about it. Disney's just screwed me over royally. Mickey's just pulled my pants down and had his way.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. I don't think Mickey doesn't pull people's pants down. That's one of my only impressions I can do.
It's not bad. You don't do a bad Bradley Cooper rocket, actually. You do the odd impression. I think we've probably got a little bit more to cover, but I mean, overall, let's be honest, it's a massive, resounding success for James Gunn, isn't it?
By every possible factor, it's a success. The fact that they're already now writing the script for the third one is
crazy. I think he's probably halfway through, you know. He probably knows what it's going to be before.
He probably knows the framework, but he said after it was released, I think he went away for a couple of weeks. And then the formal announcement came that three had been commissioned or drafted or however you'd word it, and then he said he was actually formally starting work on the script, and that's a hell of a work ethic, because by the time the third one comes out and they've done all the press tours and that, that'll have been what, 7-8 years?
I don't think he's written a couple of other things. I think there was a film that came out that he had writing credits on, some B-movie horror thing, you know what he's like. I looked the other day, did he direct the weird Scooby-Doo remake?
I've got no idea, I didn't pay any attention to that. The one that had Freddie Prinze Jr. and Sarah Michelle Gellar?
Yeah, the only reason I've got a feeling he did is because I read it was going to be R-rated, which would have been absolutely hilarious.
It probably would have been good.
Yeah, no, I know. Let's see, James Gunn wrote it. Which is incredible.
What was he drinking?
I know. He wrote the story and the screenplay. So he's something else, James Gunn. That's going back. Like, and that's the thing. You look at his credentials, and he really hasn't got any. I'm not trying to sound disrespectful. He did do Super, which is a really weird offbeat.
Yeah, Super's dark as shit.
Yeah, it is. It's got Rainn Wilson in and Ellen Page, and it's such a weird film. But actually, it's quite entertaining in parts, but it's very dark. And you kind of get a sense of his humour there, but obviously he's brought it to life. And I think the main, you know, and we always talk a lot about directors and stuff on this.
More you, to be fair.
Yeah, I know.
And more about the turd jokes.
Yeah, but in fairness, what we're saying about it is that it's great that Marvel are giving the license to their directors. And I think the same thing we're concerned about with DC, and obviously hope that, you know, I haven't seen Wonder Woman. I know the hype and I know the praise you've given it, and everyone else has. And I'm going to see it soon. But I think hopefully we see more of that in this kind of, you know, same with James Mangold with Logan. Do you know what I mean? And, same with Deadpool. And I think that's what we all want. I think Marvel did constrain its directors at times. And I think
it's what cost them Joss Whedon, isn't it? He really resented the way they wouldn't just let him do his thing.
And it cost Edgar Wright, which, let's be honest, the guy was on that man for how long? I'll never get over it.
He was working on it for something like 11 years in various different forms.
And that's the thing. The reason I won't get over it is because I love Ant-Man as a film, but I think it could have been
better,
infinitely better. And obviously, you know my love for Scott Pilgrim, and I genuinely think him doing a film of that scale would have just been incredible, and telling his story. He's got a film coming out called Baby Driver, which is getting like massive universal acclaim, 5-star reviews, which is his first kind of big
film. How old is Edgar Wright? Side note, because when I see pictures of him, I expect him to be a lot older than he actually is.
I think he's only about 40 or something.
Yeah.
He was quite young when he did Spaced with Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. That was their original thing years ago.
He's very much a cult figure, isn't he?
But he's all about soundtracks as well, which is what would have interested me, because
look at the way he used music in the Cornetto films.
Yeah, exactly. And this Baby Driver's got, you know, it's got like 30 songs on the soundtrack. It just looks incredible. It's similar to James Gunn in their approach and stuff. And I think it's great that Marvel are generally giving, you know, their directors this kind of license, because I didn't want it to all be about the development of the Avengers, do you know what I mean? Or the main storyline. I think what we're seeing a lot more is these films feeling quite standalone, do you know what I mean? And for a while it felt like it was all about pushing the main narrative. And I think this film is just such a kind of triumphant solo standing, like you said at the beginning. it stands on its own 2 feet, which is quite hard for a
sequel. That's saying something in a universe that's got Iron Man and Captain America and the Hulk and Thor and...
None of these guys are like, you know, Star-Lord's not necessarily a pin-up for kids, do you know what I mean? He's, in the sense that he's not going to sell action figures. I know you've got Groot and Rocket and stuff, I get it, but he's not like Iron Man or Captain America.
He's not marketable, is he?
You know, not really, and not the age range that they market things towards, do you know what I mean? He's almost like James Gunn in a way. He's almost like the alternative, you know, choice, isn't he? He's not the main character. Yeah. And that's what we went back to about Chris Pratt. And Chris Pratt, when he gets his scenes, I still think he's great. And when he delivers his lines, he's still great. And he does bring some emotion to it. And I think that scene with Yondu at the end is probably... Yeah. I mean, we haven't mentioned
He might have been your father boy, but I was your daddy. Or he might have been your daddy, but I was your father, whatever it is. There was a bit of dust in the cinema because there was a few people that were eyes being wiped.
For a film of this nature, to get you emotionally involved in that way is quite some going for me. Do you know what I mean?
Especially when you're getting upset about the villain dying. You know, he starts off as one of the villains. He's a child trafficker, a pirate, a horrendous bully, and yet you end up in the film and you're thinking, oh my God, I don't want him to die. And
I know.
And he ultimately, he's the hero of the day.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And he gets his send-off, do you know what I mean? And the Ravagers welcome him back in and stuff. And that was one of the best lines as well.
And Mary Poppins, y'all.
Oh, it's such a great line. And his crooked teeth and his great fin, you know, his kind of tall mohawk. I think he plays every part of it, do you know what I mean? And I think... if we could see more of Michael Rooker in cinema or in TV, because we love him in The Walking Dead as well.
He was brilliant as Merle. Again, he became a cult figure. He didn't last that long in the grand scheme of things.
I wish he had. I really wish he had.
But it had to be done because it served the greater plot point with
Daryl. Just steals every scene. He steals the scenes.
And then they brought him back, obviously, when you got to see Zombie Merle, which was absolutely brilliant. Zombie Merle was one of the highlights of the show.
Yeah, and genuinely speaking, like whenever Merle was involved, you can't take your eyes off him. Do you know what I mean? And I just think, I don't know, I kind of like it when actors have a bit of a renaissance. And obviously, James Gunn is similar as a director, where they've found the right roles or they've found the right directors to work with or the right script. And you know, the same can be said to nearly anyone in this film. Obviously, Bradley Cooper's having a stellar career. I mean, he's A-list, isn't he? Do you know what I mean? And he can do those kind of indie films and then those big blockbusters, and he's doing really well.
And Zoe Saldana.
Saldana's, like we've always said, is just really clever. She chooses exactly the right franchise and the right films to be involved in. Obviously, did the kind of motion capture stuff for Avatar and then was in the Star Trek and Guardians, and she knows how to pick the kind of right kind of films. But Chris Pratt's career since the first Guardians film has just exploded. Do you know what I mean? The guy was just always the
lovable fat sidekick.
Yeah, exactly.
And now he's an A-lister commanding big fees on Hollywood blockbusters.
Yeah,
and he owes a lot of that to James Gunn for taking a risk on him.
Almost owe it to each other. Do you know what I mean? They owe their success to each other. You know, I agree.
It's a big partnership. Yeah. It's a very big partnership.
I really would like to see, I mean, obviously, Pratt's just doing these huge films now. He's obviously doing the Jurassic series and he's doing Guardians. And
Passengers was a big one. Well, I don't know whether it's any good or not, but...
I haven't seen it. It's mixed reviews, but I think it's quite a big film. Jennifer Lawrence is in it. It's always a big card for anything. So he's obviously just doing these huge films. I kind of do want to see him get back into comedy in a lot of ways. You know, the kind of lower indie kind of comedy stuff, because I'd be quite interested where he goes in his career now. And
I want a Bert Macklin solo film.
Yeah.
from Parks and Rec, because whenever Bert Macklin came out, you know it was going to be a good episode.
Yeah, you did.
His comedy timing second to none at the minute.
He
could make anything sound hilarious.
And a lot of people have done well from that, haven't they?
Aubrey Plaza as well. She did well coming out of that. And
yeah, another one in Scott Pilgrim, I believe.
Yeah, she was.
Scott Pilgrim is literally my go-to.
That's your gateway for everything, isn't it?
But it pretty much does link nearly all modern actors, and they all link together in some weird kind of circle. Like
7 degrees of Kevin Bacon, 7 degrees of Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah, it's a funny old film though, because I know I talk about it a lot, but it's got such cult status. It's still the kind of film, a bit like all of Edgar Wright's stuff, always randomly shown in cinemas again, in like outdoor cinemas and places. And it's like, no one even watched this when it came out. How the hell are people still watching it 10 years on? It's just a bizarre film.
How long
film.
It's been?
Probably. It's probably been more. It's probably 10, 11 years. It was out when I was at uni, so...
And it's got all the, it's got all your superheroes in, hasn't it? It's got Captain Marvel in it. It's got the Atom in it as well. Scott Pilgrim himself is a superhero.
And it's got Captain America in it.
Obviously Captain America in it.
Yeah, it's just kind of bizarre, isn't it? Everyone was in it. Yeah, anyway, Scott Pilgrim is another pod, which we've already done.
And yeah.
Covered well. Overall, obviously, all we're saying is we love Guardians. And I think you think it's a little bit better. I think it's on par with the first film, and I think that's a big compliment for me. Because
definitely,
We all love the first film, and the first film for me, the big thing about it is it just took me such by surprise. Do you know what I mean? I wasn't as interested in the MCU as I am now. I was, but not to the same extent. And I just with Guardians, I think it was when. When was it released? Like 4 years ago or something like that? It was when one of my little ones was pretty little. And I think it wasn't the time where I was going to the cinema a lot and seeing as many films and doing as much. And when I watched it, it did genuinely take me by surprise. And I absolutely was hooked to it.
Snap.
And I think we've just been waiting for this to come out. And there was a lot of hype, and particularly from us, but, you know, from everyone. And when films are that overhyped to an extent, there's always a fear that they're going to fall on their sword and generally be a bit shit. And I think testament to the film and everyone that's put in all the work that it's actually a big success. And it's not just living off its name from the first film. It's actually delivered, you know, a great second film and set up well for a trilogy as well, you know, and that's what you want. You want the films. And you can't wait to see. I mean, the big thing for me is you want to see Rocket and Iron Man on screen together, don't you? Do you know what I mean? You want to see Star-Lord and Captain America or whoever together.
You know who I'd love to see? Rocket and Hulk.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
Rocket and Hulk or Rocket and Thor, because again, Thor's quite dry. And Chris Hemsworth's got good delivery. When he gets a zinger in, it seems sort of twice as funny because he's so dry and he's so deliberate with everything he says. And Rocket is just an absolute clown. And what would Hulk make of a little tiny pet fucking trash panda?
I'd love to see Hulk versus Groot. Big Groot would be quite interesting. I think before we go, we need to touch on teenage adolescent Groot. I thought that was just absolute genius.
Well, we'll tell you what. Why don't we do the post scenes in general?
Yeah.
So yeah, there was teenage sort of Kevin and Perry.
Proper Kevin and Perry.
Which
for our American listeners, if you don't know who Kevin and Perry are, we will send you a great video relating to Manchester about Kevin and Perry, which will
bread and dripping for that TR mother. Classic British comedy.
Yes, it's classic British comedy about an adult playing a man child who basically is rebelling. And it was just, it's funny that Chris Pratt obviously then knows what he's saying. Do you know what I mean? He recognises what he's saying. And why don't you tidy up your room? There's vines everywhere and stuff.
It's just gone full on like family rom-com.
Yeah, it's like you just stumbled onto this set of, I don't know,
Married with Children.
Roxanne.
Not Roxanne. I fucking hate Roxanne. She was annoying.
She was Blossom. So annoying.
There you go.
Blossom. Blossom. Nice.
Clarissa explains it all.
If anyone is showing our age right now, it's us who know Blossom here on this show.
Yeah.
She's in, what's she in? Big
She's
Bang.
In Big Bang Theory.
Yeah. Come full circle. They're making the worst show ever. Just a massive side note. They're making a young Sheldon Cooper series.
I mean, I'm a huge Big Bang Theory fan, and even I think that's going to be an absolute god-awful train wreck.
I mean, the
disaster.
Only reason I got very bored of Big Bang Theory quite early on, a couple of series in, because it's quite repetitive. But I think the guy who plays Sheldon is plays it so well. If you're taking that away from it, Jesus Christ, what are you left with? Do you know what I mean? It's going to be awful.
Yeah.
But they do these things and they'll sell a few TV ratings. They'll do all right for a bit and then it'll bomb. So that's usual. That's American telly for you.
Yeah. We had Stan Lee sitting off with the Watchers.
Indeed.
Which might be a big thing because the Watchers, I believe, are quite a big thing in the
you've always got Marvel to see a comics. Bit of Stan Lee. You always got to have a bit of Stan Lee, obviously.
Because they're sort of beings that oversee the entire universe.
Yes.
So whether they're saying that Stan Lee is one of them...
I think it came out that he wasn't, actually. I think it came out that the official line was he wasn't a Watcher, actually.
He was just a visitor.
He was a visitor. Yeah, I don't think they could have done that because they... Yeah. Anyway, we'll see.
And they had the scene with all the Ravagers back together with Sylvester Stallone, which a lot of people missed that one. That was the original lineup of
Guardians
the Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah. That was like Volume 1. That was their lineup, which I thought was really good.
That was
really subtle tip of the hat. I only found out about that one afterwards because that one was lost on me. Really lost on me. So Groot, Stanley.
And then Adam.
The Adam one. I hope a lot of people got that one because
Adam's big in the comics, obviously. So.
Well, he's huge in Infinity War, in the Infinity Gauntlet War, Thanos War, whatever sagas, and that might have been lost on a lot of people. But James Gunn is a big fan of the Adam Warlock character, and he actually wrote him into the first film, but they had to cut him because there wasn't enough time.
I bet he's happy that he decided not to, if he then went on to make a big part of the third film.
He's got to appear at some point in the third film after that setup. Who was it that they had to? It was either Adam Warlock or somebody else, and I can't remember for the life of me who. But whoever it was, it was A or B, and he decided that the narrative was better filled with whoever the other person was, but he always planned on Adam Warlock coming back because he's a huge character for the Infinity Wars. He's a big, spacey character anyway.
Yeah.
And the only way to really introduce him is in Guardians or Captain Marvel. And it makes way more sense to do it in this because they've introduced Aisha and the race of people who create him.
Yeah. I think we're missing one. I don't know which one. I thought for the life of me earlier on which one we're missing, and I couldn't remember which it was, but it's still not.
Oh, the one where Kraglin's using the fin. He's transplanted the fin, and he's trying to use the arrow. Yeah.
That
was a bit of a slow burner, that one, because it looked like it was like the sort of Family Guy where Peter falls over and he's doing his knees. It was going on a little bit, but then when you get the actual payoff, when you get the punchline, it was worth it.
Yeah, it was worth it. And I think it's nice. You don't know how that's been created, but you've got to think maybe Rocket. Did they say they repaired it? But then obviously the fin is, maybe they've got extra fins lying around the place. But
and he's doing it, isn't he, as a tribute? Because out of all the Ravagers, all the people that rode with Yondu,
he's
like his faithful lieutenant. He's the one that was always by his side, even when other people doubted him and thought he was.
Favorite other Kraglin thing is when he's on the ship on his own and he's eating soup. And he's like, I love soup. It's just, if you watch it again, you'll remember it. It's just so funny because I think he's just a great character. I think it's great of his brother to introduce him in, but I think he gave him a little bit nicer stuff to work with. Do you know what I mean?
And do you know what else Sean Gunn does in the? He is the on-set Rocket.
Oh yeah, he is.
A placement of somebody to talk to, Sean Gunn wears a green screen suit.
Yeah.
And because there was a picture that came out after the first one, after the end battle, where Drax sits down and is petting the top of Rocket's head after Groot has sacrificed himself.
Yeah, I remember that.
And Sean Gunn is sat there wearing a bright green, like, latex suit. And he's two characters in one. He's Rocket before the effects.
Yeah.
And he plays the social media game well as well.
Yeah, and they all do, and I think
we like the guns.
Yeah, it's just a massive success all around, and I think for me the big thing is, well, it's a big setup for the rest of the year, because it's going to be a fucking huge year for Marvel. Do you know what I mean? Obviously, Star Wars is monstrous for Disney this year, but you've got to think Spider-Man is a Sony film, but it's still Marvel, isn't it? Yeah,
and
exactly.
You've got Thor, and Thor has got some incredible.
It looks
from the trailer.
And I saw the trailer again at the cinema and seen it a couple of times, and obviously saw it loads of times when it was released. And I can't wait for it. I think it's just going to be brilliant. And
it's the only thing that could possibly look better than Guardians is going to be Ragnarok.
And that's the biggest shock for me, because we've both said our disappointment about both the Thor films have just not really done it justice. And I just think this looks the perfect setting. It looks great, and it looks like it's got the best villain, you know, and that's the thing. She looks hella.
Yeah,
she looks
amazing. Terrifying.
And she's, I mean, it's Cate Blanchett, isn't it? I mean, that is some casting. So
yeah, again.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. Obviously, we've got that to preview later in the year. So yeah, it's been good, man. Good to be back. Talked a lot as always. It's just such a good film. So we're finally glad to get to talk about it and be back with you. We'll be back hopefully next week. Talk about Ant-Man, as we mentioned, with a new guest to the pod, which would be great. And then, yeah, we've got some big things coming up in the summer, and hopefully some more comic standalones like you talked about, and some of the other stuff we need to get covered. So
we need to review Wonder Woman when you've seen it. Joe will be back on for that, because he's got lifetime dibs on anything Wonder Woman.
He's got lifetime dibs.
Then we're going to have to get Marco on to do a preview of Spider-Man, because Spider-Man's out in a couple of weeks.
Shit, yeah, it is.
Second or third week in July, so maybe a month?
Yeah, it's out quite soon, so the hype is huge, so it should be great, that film.
I heard some figures the other day in slightly related news. I'm sure I heard somewhere that Black Panther's first teaser trailer got 89 million views.
I saw you say that.
In 24 hours. I can't even process that number of things.
I think we've got to do a pod alone on that trailer, to be honest. I mean, how fucking cool does that film look?
It looks unreal.
It looks, and then that's out quite early next year, isn't it? It's like February, March next year.
I think it's first quarter of next year.
Oh, it looks amazing. And we'd always come back to it, obviously. We always said it's great to see it being set up in a different world, in a different kind of area. It just looks, and the cast and the director and everything looks perfect for it. So, yeah, that could be something else, to be honest. And, you know, Black Panther was so well set up in Civil War, I think we're expecting pretty big things. So yeah, that's it from us. Thank you very much for anyone who's tuned back in. I know we've been on and off for a while, but we will be back with you more regularly. And yeah, any feedback, anyone interested in coming back on and stuff, just get in touch and we'll see where we go from there.
Yeah, you know where we are. We are AI Comic Pod on Twitter, and we'll see you next time.
Take it easy.
Fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.